This is the Out of Time Film Podcast, where your hosts, Tom and John, discuss everything from blockbuster films to TV and games like there's no tomorrow.
Hello and welcome to the Out of Time Film Podcast. I'm Tom.
I'm John.
And this week we are talking about Deadpool.
I gotta say, Deadpool, that was the first time in an era where comic book movies were becoming R-rated towards mature audiences. It's just like the first time I've understood about this world of movies where it can go really bloody, gory, or sometimes risky. And it's just like, wow, okay, I didn't really expect that for the comic book movie, but here we are, Deadpool.
This is the first 15/R-rated film that I saw in the cinema. I snuck into the cinema when I was only 12. So like, I know that like in America, you can, like, any age can go to a R-rated film as long as there's an adult with you. At least I think that's how it is. But you know, in England, it's not quite like that. And so my dad was there, and I was wearing a beanie, and I was like, yeah, I'm 15. What of it? And my dad was like, yeah, he's 15. And then I sat, and I loved it. I mean, I was the perfect age. I think this is the film for kids in their early teens, like, you know, kind of like 12 to 15, 16. Like, you know, it really hits that demographic. It's a time when you watch a comic book film and you realize they can be edgy, they can be gory, they can be something completely different from the standard MCU fare or what you may see in any other comic book film. And I really cherish that, because that time of my life, this film kind of came in at the perfect time.
Yeah, it's just like that age when you grow into teenagehood. And this is like 2016, at the height of when comic book movies were just absolutely hyped to the point where, you know, we've got Infinity War that was coming out 2 years in that time. It was a really exciting time to see Deadpool. And this took a long time to get this working. Ryan Reynolds was like, you know what? I'm going to be Deadpool, because he read Deadpool comics. And he was just like, yeah, I want to do that. So it's interesting how the movie came together as well. And there was leaks of the movie somehow. The movie was leaked.
Oh, that test footage, I remember watching that in the beginning of high school, just before the film was greenlit, because, you know, that test footage had leaked. Such a big deal. I remember watching it on the way to school, like walking, we were literally walking along the road, just glued to one of my friend's phones, watching this test footage. And there was just something about it. I remember there was a Deadpool game and, you know, Deadpool comic. Like, there's something about that character that really drove that young male demographic, I think.
Yeah.
And 2016 is a really interesting year, because that's the year of Batman v Superman. You've got Suicide Squad in that year as well. We had Civil War as well, and Doctor Strange, and X-Men Apocalypse. And culturally, we were just coming off the first Star Wars film in 10 years. We had Rogue One that year. We had the 2016 Ghostbusters. It was a shift in culture, I feel. Even, like, you know, politically, that was the year of Brexit. That was the year that Trump was elected, you know. Like, so much happened in 2016. Wow. That was the year that David Bowie died.
And George Michael.
And George Michael and Carrie Fisher. You know, so many things happened in that year. So this is a strange thing.
2016 is such a bizarre year to look back. Yeah. It's just like, did that really happen?
We were in the trenches, man. That for sure was like the worst year before the 2020s. But, like, you know, this film specifically, it kicked off a obsession with R-rated comic book movies. I mean, it certainly wasn't the first, but since, it feels like we have had so many films that have tried to recapture the charm and the aesthetic of Deadpool. There have been many attempts. I think Birds of Prey is one that really gets to the core of what makes this film work. I mean, I would even argue that Birds of Prey is better than this film. Don't shoot me, but, you know, you can't really underestimate the success of this and the repercussions of it. And this film is enjoyable. I don't think it's that much beyond just fun, but, you know, it's a fairly standard comic book movie fare. It's not especially stylish. The characters aren't anything interesting or memorable. The music ain't anything, but there's some really fantastic stuff. And I definitely don't feel the same way as I did when I was younger. You know, well, I'd be giving this film a 9 or an 8 out of 10, but I think there is still a lot of value to this now, returning to it.
Yeah, I mean, I remember we were obsessed talking about it, like some really funny jokes in the movie that we just quote as well back then. But yeah, now it's interesting to look back. It's an important crux of growing up in the realm of what movies are. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because obviously, you know, this film really goes for it, the comedy. There is some that I think is so incredibly annoying and frustrating.
Yes.
And you listen to it and you're like, this isn't funny.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's not nearly as funny as it was when I was younger. But there's also some comedy that I think is right on the beat. And I think, you know, Ryan Reynolds is perfectly cast as Deadpool. There is no one else who could have done that so well. As a performer, he really gets the balance between comedic and charming and annoying as shit. And I really enjoy watching him in this role. I think especially everything that takes place in the highway sequence and the final battle, those two sections, when it's not dealing with the emotional crux of the film, it's not dealing with the origin story, it's just dealing with like Deadpool antics. They really nail that. They really get it right. And in many ways, this feels just like a Deadpool comic leaping straight off the screen. There are some really fun, because I know that a big thing, especially now, is the meta jokes. We're making jokes about how silly is it that we're in a comic book? Oh, we're using our made up names. You're Doctor Strange. So these things kind of feel like staples now. Like, you can't take yourself seriously. Deadpool has always been a big part of meta jokes. And sometimes it really doesn't work, but there are some times when it does. And those times are delightful. There's a moment when Deadpool says, "Do you think Ryan Reynolds got this far from his superior acting method?" And I thought that was really funny, because it's just a delightful jab at himself, and they don't take a pause to be like, "Oh yes, round of applause." And I think those moments, I don't know if those are the moments that are written or if those are the moments that are ad-libbed, but there are some really funny elements to this film.
Yeah, you can definitely tell that Ryan Reynolds is just great as Deadpool, and you can tell that he improvised a lot. There's some really good jokes, but then it just gets really tired and it just gets really annoying, and it just feels like, okay, the movie's kind of relying on jokes like to really get the plot forward or get some characters to talk. There's some jokes that just kept on getting frustrating, or like really long-winded dialogues that just didn't need it to be in the movie as well, especially some characters. But honestly, the movie was just a bit messy with the structure. You just couldn't really get in with the movie. Like, there were some really excellent sequences, but then those sequences are just getting interrupted by the flashbacks, and it's just so annoying, because it just feels like this is a Deadpool movie. This is something that Deadpool is trying to show. I mean, there's an entire game where Deadpool is trying to create a game about himself, which is like super meta, but it does it in an excellent way. But this movie just feels like a whiplash of so many things. It's trying to be emotional, it's trying to be funny, it's trying to be, you know, all of those things, but it just feels like you're on this roller coaster and you couldn't see the view properly and just feel like you're just don't know where you're going.
Yeah, there are times when I think you can see that view and you're kind of like, okay, yes. This is like, one of my favorite moments is when Deadpool, Colossus, and Negasonic Teenage Warhead get out of the taxi.
Yes, that one.
And X-Con give it to you, you know, begins to ramp up. DMX, and they start walking in slow motion and the music's going for it. And then like, you get the whole, like, oh, where's your bag of ammo? And he's like, oh, fuck. Like, that stuff really works, because, you know, you get hit with the epic superhero-ness of it, and you get hit with the sincerity, but also it has that tongue-in-cheek and it has that nice subversion of expectations. But then as soon as he's like, well, I guess I don't have the ammo, we're gonna do it anyway, and then the music kicks back in, they keep on, like, that really works. But I agree with you, the structure is so bad for this film. Like, you know, you start with that amazing slow motion intro where you get Angel of the Morning. And you get all of, you know, like the spoofy, like, you know, some asshats film and God's Perfect Idiot, all of those, you know, a CGI character, British villain. I loved all that stuff. And then you cut to him in the car when he meets Dopinder, and he's got the chewing gum on the lens, and it's working really well immediately. Like, we're cutting straight to it. And then out of nowhere, we cut to a random scene of Ajax just to establish him as the villain. He sits there, he chokes a guy, and then leaves. It's like, yeah, it doesn't.
What was the point of that?
Exactly. What was the point of that?
Yeah.
And then as we get through that whole sequence, we keep on flashing back to the origin story, and the balancing between the two is so off. You spend too much time in both places. You spend too much time in the past and you begin to forget about the present. And that's a very difficult thing to get right. I think about Arrow, which is one of my favorite TV shows. And, you know, I think about season 5 specifically, and the whole structure of the first 5 seasons of Arrow is that every episode flashes in between Oliver Queen as the Green Arrow in the present, and then his time on Lian Yu or Hong Kong or Russia, trying to survive and learning all of his skills. The best episodes of Arrow work because the flashbacks are short, they're one scene long each time, and they add something. There is a parallel going on. There's a great episode in season 5 where in the flashback, Oliver's learning sacrifices to make to work as a team to ring a bell. And in the present, he's teaching his new team of superheroes that exact same lesson. So the flashbacks are really adding something something to that story. In what might be the best episode of the show, he's going out in the flashbacks for the first time as a killer, as a murderer on the streets of Russia. And in the present, the villain is making him admit to the fact that he enjoyed killing him, that he has a darkness inside of him. Deadpool, the flashbacks never really added anything. It's the story that needs to be told, but scene by scene, I didn't go from the highway sequence to a flashback. And then when we returned to the highway sequence, I didn't feel like I had more. I didn't feel like I was enriched. Do you know what I mean? I didn't feel like I was ever like, oh, I see where this is all going.
It just doesn't work. It's a very odd choice to have because it just feels like it's just disrupting the flow and you do not want to disrupt the flow towards the audience. It just feels like, okay, you could have had Deadpool explain in a taxi about a flashback, you know, like some really short flashback, and that could have helped to establish Ajax, that could have helped establish Vanessa, all of those things in a very quick 5 minute, you know, like how the protagonist explains towards the other character about things. You could have expanded upon Ajax, like Francis. You don't even get to understand him as a character. He's like, I don't feel anything. And it feels like, okay, why are you doing this? What is your motivation? And again, this is like a one-dimensional villain, but this is a comedy film. And how do you establish a villain in a comedy? You've got some excellent comic book movies that show villains' motivation and makes them human. But here, Francis, it just feels like he's just like the villain of the week and then just doing stuff. Deadpool 2 does it better because there is a villain in that story and it just makes it so familiar, but also it has the theme of family in there as well. And then here, this is about love. And how do you center that love around Vanessa and Wade in this story? Because it's just like, this is a Deadpool movie. How do you balance the comedy and the love in that as well? It just feels like, well, okay, we kind of gone into reality, which is great. We get to see, you know, this human side to Deadpool in a way of like he has to, you know, deal with cancer. And that was really emotional. I thought that was a really good emotional beat in the movie. Just like he has to realize that his life has not changed, but Vanessa's life has changed as well. But there isn't really an arc for Deadpool. There isn't a really clear arc until he reunites with Vanessa at the end. And Vanessa's like, oh, okay, cool. Yeah, you're living with blind out. Yeah, cool.
Yeah, I guess the arc is love yourself.
Aww. Yeah, love yourself. Yeah.
I really get what you're saying about you got your love story and you've got your revenge story. And I think the love story works pretty well. And the whole scene at the end when they reunite and he plays Careless Whisper, like, that's really, really sweet.
I'm never gonna get...
That's right, sing it, John. But the thing that doesn't work, and I agree with you, Ajax, Francis, what a weak villain, a stupendously weak villain. Like,
British.
Yeah, like, that seems like all they're going for. They were like, okay, he's British, that's all we need, that's enough. And the fight scene with him is pretty cool at the end, but does that warrant such a nothing villain? This kind of slots right alongside that era of just completely unremarkable comic book villains. You know, I listed all those comic book films before, and as great as Luthor is in Batman v Superman, and as great as Zemo is in Civil War, you've also got Caecilius in Doctor Strange, and Apocalypse in X-Men Apocalypse, and Enchantress in Suicide Squad, probably the worst of them all. Like, you know, and Incubus, like, you know, all these characters, they're just there for the sake of it, because the plot demands a villain, and they are not developed well. It is tough to make a villain layered when you just want them to be the mustache twirling antagonistic threat, but it's not impossible. No way is it impossible. And I feel like this film really could have done something interesting with the villain. And I agree with you about the second film. I'm really excited to rewatch that, because as much as I'm a little bit nervous that it's not going to be as good, I remember loving Deadpool 2. Yeah. And I still feel like in my mind, I remember it. And I'm like, yeah, no, I think Deadpool 2 is peak. You know, David Leitch cooked, as he always does. And so, yeah, I'm definitely perplexed at the choice to use such a boring villain. Because in terms of, like, the roster of side characters, I think that the love between Vanessa and Wade works. I think Blind Al and Weasel are fun characters to serve a purpose. Dopinder, you know, Colossus is delightful. I really enjoy the whole, like, X-Men stuff. That's really fun. But it really falls when you get to the villain in such a major capacity. Especially when a big chunk of the flashbacks is this whole torture and this thing that brings Wade to becoming the scarred body that he has in the present. I just never felt anything towards Ajax.
Yeah, it just feels like, okay, I'm gonna torture you, and that's it. He just doesn't do anything. He's like, oh, I'm British. Yeah, I like a cup of tea or some of that. And it's just, why is Hollywood obsessed of having British villains? Like, you just get to hear a villain and they're British, and it's just like, okay.
It's like how every James Bond villain almost is always somebody else with like physical scarring and a different accent. In No Time to Die, they're like, we've got Rami Malek, but we have to give him an accent. He can't be evil unless he has some sort of unplaceable. It's like, yeah, villains are such a strange trend. It's such a difficult thing to get right.
True, and yeah, it's like, so weird.
I think that so many aspects of this film are just bog standard, and that's okay, but it doesn't really do anything. The reason why I compare it to Birds of Prey is because I think Birds of Prey is also fairly standard, but does everything in such an interesting way. Birds of Prey, it's got a fantastic villain in Black Mask. It's got a fantastic score by Daniel Pemberton. So many things of that film that shouldn't really be memorable are extremely memorable. This film, this is nothing that really grabs. Every time I think about Deadpool, I do think about cool things from this film, but I think more about Deadpool 2. To be honest,
yeah, I still remember the quotes. I still remember some really good action sequences in the film, but it's just like, do I really take any away from the story? Not really. I don't really take away. Why do we care for Deadpool? I mean, we do care for their love between Vanessa and Wade and what he's going through, really. Deadpool is a very interesting character because he's mortal, and in the comics, he has a love interest towards death, literally death, the character that Thanos was in love with as well. And that was a really interesting dynamic between, and it's like, how does he keep on going throughout his life? But here he was just there to make jokes. I wish he could control the movie in some way, you know, like how he could manipulate reality, but he only fourth wall breaks in the movie, which I thought it was good. Like, there was some really good fourth wall breaks in the movie that was pretty funny as well.
Yeah, do like She-Hulk at the end when she just completely breaks all the walls and literally goes out into the real world, I guess.
Yeah, something like that. Like, not go too meta, but like, he could be like, oh, I want to be like Steven Spielberg. I want to change the movie. I want to turn into this and that. Like, that would be really interesting to see, because I think he's a character that goes way beyond comprehension in Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's just like, how does he know everything about this? How does he see beyond the camera? Or how does he know the other characters in the world that might not exist?
Yeah, I really enjoy the Ryan Reynolds jokes, the Hugh Jackman jokes, the jokes about X-Men. Yeah, like when he's like, you guys couldn't afford any other X-Men, or when he talks about McAvoy or Stewart and the timeline's confusing. Yeah. That stuff is really good. And then that's the stuff that stuck with me over 8 years. Oh God, it's been so long. But, you know, at the end of the day, this is an introduction to Deadpool. It's a simple origin story, and I do have fun with it. Tim Miller, who directed it, I think it did a good job, and he left as director for the second movie because, if I'm remembering right, he wanted to keep the small stakes and the low budget of the first film, but Ryan Reynolds wanted to go bigger and better. And you can see where Miller was coming from, because, like, I think the simplicity of the action, like the highway sequence, it's something the film has going for it. It's simple, fun, fast, and, you know, it gets the core of what you want out of an R-rated comic book film, you know, full of gore and really reveling in it. I love it when Wade has his 12 bullets and to take out the guys just with his bullets, and then, like, you know, we get the swords as well, and that's how we kind of transition into the first flashback too. But, like, there is some really, really nice uses of action, the whole sequence at the end as well.
I'm really, really looking forward to watch Deadpool 2 and see all the comparison between the first one. And this movie kind of gave me that, not nostalgia, but the idea of 13-year-old me watching this movie. And it was just like, okay, this is really new. I don't know what I'm experiencing. And it was funny, edgy, and it kind of gave me that idea of what older movies are like. At the end of the day, I think this is a really good introduction to the character Deadpool. And then there's some really good introductions as well, like the comics and then the game. But yeah, the sequel as well, if I remember correctly, I really loved watching it. And I think that was so much fun.
Yeah, no, for sure. So, Deadpool, what do you give it out of 10?
I'm going to give it a 6.
Yeah, I think that's perfectly fair. I agree with that. 6 out of 10. Thank you, everybody, for listening. If you're listening on YouTube and you enjoyed it, you can like and subscribe if you want to see more. And if you're listening on Spotify or Apple, you can follow and give us a 5-star review if you think we're worthy. And next week, we're not doing Deadpool 2. Not quite yet. That's going to be the week after next. Because next week, we're going to be doing A Quiet Place Day 1, which
Day
is
one.
I think maybe, is that our first horror ever on the pod? I think it might be. Unless you count New Mutants.
New Mutants, oh my god, that was like episode 3.
Watched. It was episode three, yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
You didn't even watch it. It was just me explaining oh, the plot yeah. to you.
Oh, my God. Some deep lore. Yeah. I still haven't watched it today.
Yeah. It's bad. Bad movie. But yeah, so next week will be Quiet Place Day One. You can send us an email at outsidefilmpod@gmail.com. We'll be recording next Saturday, so let us know your thoughts on Quiet Place Day One by then, and we'll answer it right here on the podcast next week.
Yes, and you can follow us on Instagram at outoftimefilmpod to see our incredible thumbnails from Zane Asbol, on Twitter for more thoughts from Tom and me, and TikTok to see edited clips, which are all also on Instagram Reels and YouTube Shorts. And you can find links to that all in the description below. Thanks to L. James Mayer for the excellent theme and Ronan Phillips for vocals as always, and I think that's everything. Take what you're given,
give nothing back.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.